You're listening to Blast Processing, the official podcast of all things video gaming, gadget, and gear related on DVDverdict.com. On tonight's episode, Steve heads for outer space, Kev summons some Eldritch Lords, and John stares at his moving tattoo? Episode 14, this podcast took an arrow in the knee.
Hello.
See you again.
That's a great way to start the podcast.
Hello.
Hello.
It's always the first thing you should say in a conversation. Hello.
Hello.
You're listening to, what are we listening to?
Blast Processing, everybody! Blast Processing!
Live from an undisclosed location somewhere in the North Atlantic.
Don't say anything. Don't tell them where it is. You're listening to Blast Processing, the official, unofficial, semi-official, sometimes regulated, often imitated, never duplicated podcast for all things video gaming, gadget, tablet.
Whitney Houston.
No! Stab! No!
We always have to mention somebody who recently died in our opening.
This is the official, unofficial, officially all Whitney Houston, all the time podcast on the internet.
Brought to you by Dr. Pepper.
That wasn't an alcoholic beverage. I wish it was.
Brought to you by Ice Cold 23 Flavors Dr. Pepper.
It's 23 flavors that just can't be beat. Trust me, I've sent people to the doctor.
Dr. Pepper, I will always love you.
Oh, yeah, that works.
Hey!
Okay, that'll be
high five!
Classy!
There you go.
Go Team Venture.
Yes. Our listeners can't see that.
With us, with me, with you, in your ear, Mr. Kevin Woolridge.
See you, save me. Save always, that's the way it should be.
And Mr. John Mercer.
I get so emotional, baby.
And I, of course, am your host, Steve.
You said you'd seen the same
thing. Hello? Is it me you're looking for?
It's Lionel Richie.
I can't believe you saying Lionel Richie.
Now Lionel Richie's going to die.
Oh, man.
I can miss him.
Wait, that wasn't I singing Lionel Richie?
You
that
were.
Was, yeah.
You were
That's
singing
why you did it.
Yeah.
What were you singing, John?
Whitney Houston.
Oh. We already mentioned Whitney Houston. Anyway. I hope Lionel's doing
Super
well.
Break. No, let's not. Lionel's doing fine.
Dancing on the ceiling.
Oh, jeez. Oh!
That's
so,
it. I don't know any more of his music.
What was it? No, never mind.
What are we here to do?
We're here to talk about...
We're not here to talk about New Jack Swing.
or White Knights.
Or Motown.
Motown.
No, Motown.
Remember that Motown band covered Nickelback?
Good lord. Somebody stop us.
Video games.
Yes!
Go.
I've been playing a demo.
You've been playing a demo?
Yeah, I'm going to take a page from the illustrious book of Mr. Woolridge.
Yeah.
And say that I've been playing a demo.
Nice.
I fired up the demo for...
Wait for it.
Boom, 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 boom. Mass Effect 3!
Hey! Hey!
I don't know why, but I wasn't excited until I played it.
Man, that was cool.
That was amazing. That was like, okay, holy spectacle, Batman.
Yeah, yeah.
How far were you into it when I came in?
Maybe 20 minutes.
Yeah, and, wow, and half of the demo is dialogue.
Yeah, it was...
Dude, half of Mass Effect is dialogue.
It's what I can only assume is the opening sequence of the game, and it was mag-splendorific.
Glorificent.
Yeah, it was glorificent. It was...
Trumulescent.
That doesn't count. That's a real word.
It resonated with Arya.
We probably got listeners out there who are like, as soon as you said it, they recognize the reference.
No, I wouldn't imagine anyone.
No, we don't have any listeners.
And we don't have anyone who would recognize that reference. And if you do recognize that reference, no offense, but go away. We don't want you.
Hey, man, I listen to the podcast.
Hey! We got one listener.
That's right.
Unfortunately, it's one of the guys who records it.
It's okay. So, yeah,
I don't even listen to this shit when I edit it.
You don't?
Guys, do I need to tell you about the Jantourage again?
Okay, sorry. Mass Effect 3 demo.
Yep.
I was blown away by the opening of Mass Effect 2. I thought the opening of Mass Effect 2 was one of the most epic, beautiful-looking things I had ever seen on my Xbox 360. Mass Effect 3 trumps it.
Nice.
There it is, right there. So, anybody who was wondering...
Dwarfs it even?
Yeah, yeah. The opening for Mass Effect 3, the only word that can be used to describe it is absolutely freaking epic.
Mm. That's three words. Just go on. Just continue. Stop staring at me.
The only three words. The only three words that can be used to describe it are freaking awesomely epic.
Do you remember the tune who killed your brother in it?
So, yeah, no, Mass Effect 3, freaking fantastic. I mean, when you guys were here, you saw parts of it.
Oh, yeah, man, that was cool.
Visuals, gorgeous, absolutely beautiful looking.
Keith David factor, through the roof.
Keith David is there.
When he was running, I found it a little odd. The first time he went into sprint, the Keith David character,
yeah, because
it looked a little stiff.
But, well, dude, it'd be like watching Deep Space Nine and seeing the what's the guy's name, Sisko? See him punch someone.
But doesn't he turn into, like, a badass in the last few seasons? Doesn't he, like, grow a goatee and get all punch-happy and shit?
Yeah, but he's not Keith David badass.
Oh, okay, alright, fair enough.
Like, Keith David suddenly remembered he was in The Thing.
Yeah, he was awesome.
Or They Live.
Yeah, that's right.
But, you know, no, it's... Man, it was just so good. And that ending for that first sequence, like, you know, it was just... It was one of those stand-up and cheer, like, yeah! It got me so pumped.
Yeah.
So, you know, from being... A game that, you know, yeah, it was a day one purchase guaranteed because of my love for the first two.
That was about 30 minutes right there.
Yeah.
And then there's more in the demo.
And there's more in the... It's a pretty extensive demo. I stopped it because it skips ahead in the storyline and I just didn't want to see anymore.
I don't like it when demos do that.
Yeah.
When they give you bits and pieces of different levels.
Yeah.
I think it ruins... I would rather get the introduction, a really solid introduction... That gets me want to play more.
I'd like to say that's probably that's the reason, you know, what I didn't like about the Asura's Wrath demo and why I'm not buying the game.
Because it's batshit crazy?
No, but the reason I'm not buying Asura's Wrath is just because it sucked.
Oh,
the demo was terrible.
We now take a brief break to take a word from our sponsors.
Now you got Dr. Pepper all over your computer.
Dude, there's spark shooting out of it.
We don't want to lose this episode as well.
No, we're either going to lose the episode or a genie's going to come out with weird science.
No, by the way, this is, for those who tuned in late, this is actually episode 14, not episode 13.
Are we actually going to speak of the podcast that will not be named?
We should, actually, man. You know, myth needs to turn into legend.
Rumor grew. Whispers of a nameless fear.
Things that should...
That's right, so episode 13 got lost.
Episode 13 did get lost when Steve's laptop decided that it didn't like its hard drive anymore.
What sucked even more about it is it was probably our best episode.
It was a good one. It was definitely a good one.
I don't think we're ever going to be, you know, especially like in a Skyping situation.
Well,
we're never
going to
be that
on. The part where the semi-naked women jumped through the flaming hoop and landed on the clown's head, that was pretty intense.
It was.
I was not expecting that.
And man, that Tom Cruise cameo?
The Tom Cruise cameo? And man, I did not realize that man could juggle chainsaws so well. But you all missed it, I'm sorry, because I was a dumbass and kicked my laptop off the table and the hard drive died.
It's okay. This one's going good so far, I think.
We've deviated already. We're back. Mass Effect 3. Anyway, Mass Effect 3.
That's cool.
Awesome. Absolutely fantastic. Gameplay, nothing new. Agreed?
Yeah. As somebody who owns the first two but hasn't really bitten deep into them yet...
You should bite deep into the first
one. Well, I haven't even played the second one.
You need to finish the first two first.
Yeah, I'm going to. I'm going to buy Mass Effect 3 and it's going to sit on my shelf for 4 years.
Okay.
It looked... And you're probably going to listen to me and say, you're an idiot. There's more shooter to it.
You're exactly right. And the second one did have a stronger emphasis on shooting as well.
And the first one, you know, it felt like, you know, you'd go shooting at it, but it was still an RPG thing.
Well, I mean, the first one, it didn't use, you know, your own reflexes as such. It played like a shooter, like a third-person shooter.
Yeah.
But
there was,
it was still dice rolling being done under the hood, you know? It was kind of like Alpha Protocol, which we will not speak of. But the second one did rely considerably more on your shooter reflexes.
I'm reasonably sure I saw a headshot tonight.
Yeah, you probably did.
Yeah.
And it's cool that it, like, you know, they've tightened up the shooting mechanics again and stuff, but when you start getting into combat roles and and all this kind of stuff, how much of the original is still really left, you know? And now, I mean, Mass Effect, I was worried that it was going to be entirely shooter. I was worried we were basically getting Gears of War with a Mass Effect skin, you know?
Yeah.
And to an extent, it does feel a little like Gears of War, but the camera's not as precise and stuff like that, so the shooting mechanics are still not, you know...
But again, you're just looking at the beginning of the game.
Right? Yeah.
You might
yeah.
get out into space and it turns into the big sprawling...
Well, I mean, this is exactly what Mass Effect 2 did. Mass Effect 2 still had, you know, those levels where you're entirely dealing with dialogue instead of combat... you know, like all of that kind of stuff, the intrigue and all the diplomatic stuff and all that was still there, and it looks like it's all still going to be there here, too, so I'm really excited for that.
We're talking about a series where, you know, spoiler warning, but when did the first game come out?
2007.
Okay, 5 years ago, so, yeah.
No, 2006.
Okay,
yeah.
6 years ago, so if you haven't played it yet, or you don't know this yet, bite me. You're talking about a game series where you can talk the villain into shooting himself.
Yeah, which was, I mean, that moment in Mass Effect.
That's a gaming memory. Right?
You know,
that's
you're fighting the last boss and you convince him that what he's doing is wrong and he tries to blow his own head off. That was epic.
Yeah.
That was like, I mean, and the first Mass Effect, I still hold out as one of my, probably top five of this generation.
Shepard gets a +6 to charisma.
Yeah, fucking amazing game. The first Mass Effect's incredible. The second one, based on the strength of the first act and the last act alone, amazing. The middle act I found was kind of weak. But it was still, you know, like, it was a great game, and the shooter mechanics felt better, but I felt like it kind of...
And it had about 200% more merge sheet.
It did. And it did kind of focus the shooter stuff a little bit too heavily, I found, but now, according to reports, the third one is back to more the RPG style inventory management and all that kind of stuff, which I'm happy about. More weapons, more customization, that kind of thing than Mass Effect 2, mm-hmm. which is great, which I'm really cool with. And just based on what I've seen storyline-wise, you know, I was expecting... You know, just the game to kind of be structured like a shooter with a few cutscenes, but based on what I've seen now, like based on the storyline stuff I saw just in that opening 20 minutes, it does seem like more of a traditional Mass Effect outing. Like, it is more the same kind of style as the first one and the second one, and that makes me very excited.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I thought, you know, the whole...
That thing at the end when he threw Shepard the thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was...
That was cool.
That
man.
Was amazing. Yeah. That was
fist pumping.
Yeah, that was the leap off the couch cool. You know? It was awesome. Go play it. The demo's up for free, PlayStation Network and Xbox Live. Get it, play it, love it.
Yeah.
That's all I gotta say.
Great.
Fantastic.
It's old. We could be playing another demo.
No, we're not gonna do that right now, John. I
hate our fan base. I wanna play it now.
I did also play some Soul Calibur 5, which I did talk about in the last episode. But,
Sorry, get into it. We still got to talk about Amalur. We talked about that in the last episode,
oh,
too.
Oh, Amalur. Amalur is so good.
Talk about Soul Calibur, but we get that done.
Okay, Soul Calibur 5. It's very pretty. It's got combos. You fight people. It's not as dark and ridiculous as the last few entries in the series have been, so there's not it's not full of these big, giant, veiny characters with giant axes and swords that look retarded.
And eyeballs everywhere.
Eyeballs and stuff. Yeah, none of that. It's more... It's definitely a return to form of the original Soul Blade, Soul Calibur. You know, like, it feels more, you know, a bunch of fighters from all around the globe getting together to sword fight each other. Which is what I wanted out of it. And Ezio also kicks ass in it.
Cool.
It's not like, you know, throwing Darth Vader into Soul Calibur 4. It just gives me a headache.
Nice.
And my last one, the last one I'll get into, Kingdoms of Amalur: Reckoning.
Beautiful game.
Oh, it's awesome.
Sit tight, this is going to take about 40 minutes.
No, it won't. I'll keep it brief. I'll keep it as brief as I can.
I've been playing this game, too.
Oh, okay, alright, fair enough. You know, Dream Team, you had Kurt Schilling, you had Todd McFarlane, you had R.A. Salvatore, you had Ken Rolston, who's the last name, you know, not as many people have known, but I'm a big Oblivion diehard, so, you know, there you go, that's how I know him.
Well, dude, he's one of the... Rolston, you know, delivered the first must-have title of this current console generation.
Him and
Todd.
Yeah, and Todd Howard. You know,
Neil.
And
Neil
before Todd. I think they knocked it out of the park. You know, I think Schilling put his money where his mouth was. I think he's got a game that he should be really proud of. And based on his appearance on Jimmy Fallon earlier this week, he is really, really proud of it. He's over the moon for it. You know, and based on what Salvatore has been saying on Facebook, he's really proud of it. And guys, you did a fantastic job.
I'm sure Todd McFarlane was proud of it too.
McFarlane, I read an interview with McFarlane, actually. I watched a video interview with McFarlane talking about it. And it gave me a whole new respect for the guy.
Yeah.
I always kind of, you know, I dismissed Todd as just one of these egotistical early 90s comic book artists who... made their fortune, built their empire, and then effed off George Lucas style, you know?
Yeah.
And I got a whole new respect for Todd and for Salvatore, to be honest with you, because these guys did not do this game as hired guns.
No.
They were integral to it right from the get-go. Todd had complete artistic control. Salvatore had complete narrative control. You know, these guys really guided the ship in terms of, like, the narrative, the history, the plot, and the visual look of the game. And what really blew me away about Todd's role in it was, you know, he was asked two direct questions. They basically, number one was, how responsible were you for the look of the game, and why doesn't it look like Todd McFarlane artwork? And his response was basically, you know, there's a handful of Todd McFarlane fans in the world, but there's a boatload of video game fans in the world. And he didn't want to appeal to that handful. He wanted to appeal to that boatload. So he put his own style aside and did what was best for the game. And the other thing was, how much artwork was he directly responsible for? And he said he was there day in, day out. He drew a lot of stuff for this game. And, you know, like, the guy does definitely have an artistic flair. And, I mean, say what you want. I mean, people have been kind of jumping on the overrated train and, you know, loving to bash the guy in the last few years. You know, him, Rob Liefeld, all of these Image guys, you know.
It was just Todd's, but I don't know how much money on the Mark McGwire ball.
Yeah. Ever since Todd spent the fortune buying baseballs and a baseball team, apparently. But either way, you know, the guy definitely still has a flair for artistic quality, and I think it shows all over Emelor. Like, the character designs are great, the style is great, it's really, you know, it's an infectious style, it's somewhere in between World of Warcraft and Fable, you know? But it's not as cartoony as either.
No.
Yeah.
And I mean, if you look at some, you look at, like, their facial shape and everything, the weapons are carrying that, you can see McFarlane in there.
You can, yeah, you definitely can. It's subdued, but it's there.
Yeah.
You know? And I gotta say, I love the look and feel of the game. It's fast, it's smooth, it runs like, you know, polar opposite of Skyrim. It runs like, you know, churned butter. It's so smooth. And it feels so cool. Like, you know, you pick it up and it's got that same addictive quality that Skyrim has. You know, Skyrim has that whole, just one more quest, just one more bit of exploration and stuff. And Amalur has that exact same feel, but it's more tightly focused. You don't get the same dead air, the same dead land and stuff that you'd get in Skyrim, you know? Mm. You don't get the monotony that Skyrim has at times.
Yeah, it's true.
You know?
Yeah, what it lacks in scale, it delivers in focus.
Yeah, and I just finished a faction quest in it for a group called the House of Ballads.
Oh, yes.
I finished the faction quest today, and the end of it, like the end result... it gives you a choice to make, and it doesn't have any real bearing on the rest of the game, but it does have bearing on the outcome of that quest. And it was freaking awesome. Like, it was so freaking cool. Really, really, really neat. You know, I was really pleased, really happy with it all. And I've been going through the Warsworn, they're called, which is like the Fighters Guild. And that quest line's been really cool so far, too. Because not only is it...
I love it, man. The War Sworn.
The War Sworn, and my rank is Pledge Shield.
What's the
Travelers.
That's awesome.
And what's that's so cool, like, it's all got this extra dimension to it, and this is Salvatore. This is Salvatore in action. You know, this is a guy who's a 27 times bestseller on the New York Times bestseller list. You know, like, this is a guy...
For writing Dungeons & Dragons novels.
Yeah, exactly. You know, but, like, this is a guy with experience in writing, and this is a guy who's focused on this property. This is a guy, you know, this is not someone who just cooked up a plot.
And you gotta ask yourself, how long do you think Salvatore's been waiting for this? Because every time he writes a book that isn't set in Forgotten Realms,
it
never does as well as his, like, Legend of Drizzt.
Yeah.
And, I mean, yeah, it's, you know what, it's fine to write it off now, man, but, I mean, when I was 13, that was the shit.
Right. I was never really big into the Drizzt stuff.
No.
I never really...
I mean, you know, you can definitely see his weakness as a writer.
Yeah.
Right? Or
It's not even that I didn't like... the
shortcomings of the material. I mean,
yeah.
You gotta ask yourself, how long has Salvatore been waiting to just cut loose and just create something?
Yeah.
Right?
You know, give birth to stuff.
And you can see, like, this... You know, you've got this... Just epic... And we're even saying that word a lot this episode. Epic storyline. Epic games.
Yeah,
epic story about, you know, fighting villains who can't be killed. you know, whenever they die, they're reborn.
And the whole game has this this underlying theme of defining fate.
Yeah, everything is predestined. And,
yeah.
You know, the big, what's the villain's name? Gadflo. Yeah,
Gadflo
in his crystal castle of Amethine or something. Yeah.
Amethine leading the Tuatha Danann. Yeah. Fucking cool.
And they say right in the opening how, you know, humanity is doomed because he's not fated to die at the hands of a mortal.
Yeah.
And then you've got this, you know, your character.
No, it's not that he's not fated to die at the hands of a mortal. He's not fated to die at the hands of someone with a fate or something like that. Like, it has to do with the fact that your character,
the fateless, you know, is reborn and is
the fateless one.
Not part of the plan anymore.
Yeah, right? Yeah. He's outside the tapestry.
Yeah.
And, like even these... Not to get too heavy into spoiler territory, but the guys, the House of Balance, the guys I just did
that is
the Summer Court,
dude. That idea for that type of faction, is one of the coolest things I have ever.
Well, I mean,
ever
they're
seen in fantasy.
They're these fairy folk, and what they do, like they're
dude,
immortals.
They're the greatest bards guild I've ever seen.
Yeah, well, they're immortals, and what they do is they relive their story over and over. They have their recorded tales, and whenever they come back, like whenever they die and they're reincarnated, they basically relive the same tale again. And this is what they do: they tell their stories over and over by reenacting them. And what you
so
do is you
forgets it.
Yeah, and you come in, and you inadvertently take the place of one of their knights because his tale gets bollocksed and doesn't get retold, doesn't end the way it's supposed to, and it throws everything into total upheaval. And you're the linchpin in all of it, and it's just so freaking cool. Mm-hmm. You know,
but at the same time. Your character is, what the Fate Weavers say in the game, is living proof that, you know...
Fate can be defied.
Fate can be defied.
Yeah.
And it goes back to all that stuff, you know, I loved so much in Legacy of Kain. This is the type of story I will just dig my teeth into.
And what's so cool about it, I know we said the same thing in the last episode, and I don't want to come down on Skyrim. Yeah, I don't want to come down on Skyrim because I love Skyrim. Skyrim's an amazing, amazing game.
This is Skyrim's game of the year unanimously.
Yeah, but I mean, you look at the narrative, you look at what these guys are doing with Reckoning, and all of these undercurrents and stuff like that. None of this stuff exists in Skyrim. You're the Dragonborn. You gotta, you know,
all
do your
thing.
All
the lore is in pieces of paper.
All the lore is in books that you read, and it harkens back thousands of years and stuff. And I mean, like, yes, it adds color, it adds texture, it adds flavor. But with Reckoning, it feels like it's interwoven so much more effectively throughout the game.
I'm talking to characters, and you know you'll get all the options you can pick there. And you know, every character I've spoken to has an option there to talk about the Fae or talk about the Tuatha.
Yeah, and everybody has something different to say.
I'm clicking on all of them.
Yeah, every character has an opinion on stuff and has like, you know, it's so ridiculously detailed from a narrative standpoint.
Are you playing it, Kevin?
I played the demo a couple of weeks back, but that's pretty much it. And I'm totally on board with you guys. I freaking love it. I can't wait to start playing the full version.
I'm so pumped.
Won't like Skyrim.
Well, I got to give him back Skyrim first. I've had that for like a month.
A month?
A month.
Hey, well,
came out in November.
Seriously? I've had it that long?
Yeah.
Oh, Steve, I'm so sorry.
I don't care, man.
But no, Joe's playing it. Who's going to say no to Joe?
Man, I'd feel bad. He doesn't have much in his life right now.
Nobody says no to Joe Woe.
No, Joe Woe is completely addicted to it now, man. Anyway, I'm going to get into that when I talk about what I'm playing.
Yeah. Okay. So John, you were playing Reckoning as well?
Yeah, I was playing. Well, I just had my say about Reckoning. You know, I'm digging it in the same way, that same big way I dug Skyrim.
Yeah.
Right? And I mean, you know, I couldn't have cared less about Oblivion. Now, yes, I am interested in going back and playing Oblivion, and everyone tells me I should. It's something you shouldn't miss, right?
The thing with Oblivion, and it's really funny, myself and Mr. Dinosaur Sword Chucks had a conversation yesterday. That'd be Tony. Shout outs to Tony. We had a we had a brief conversation yesterday about he just finished Skyrim, and he was really, you know, like, when he first started playing, Tony is a guy who could never get into Bethesda RPGs. Never.
Right.
Always found him too open, too intimidating. He always felt like he was boning his own character. You know, like...
That's what kept me away.
Yeah. And he could never get into Oblivion. He couldn't get into Fallout 3. I mean, his loss. You know, that's as far as I'm concerned. But he started playing Skyrim, and initially he just said, it just felt like a Bethesda RPG to me. But he got out of the first dungeon, he started to roam around and stuff, and I mean, now the guy is in Netchishi Labrador, Right. In the middle of winter, it's like 50 degrees below Celsius, so he can't go outside.
He is in Skyrim.
You know, he is in Skyrim. So he's got nothing better to do. So he's like, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to play this game. And he ordered Reckoning from me, asked me to ship up Reckoning to him. And he's like, okay, I got to get Skyrim finished before Reckoning shows up. And he called me yesterday just to tell me that he is completely and utterly ridiculously enthralled now by Skyrim. You know, he's finished it. He's still doing all the, like, the faction quests and stuff like this. And he asked me, you know, should I go back to Oblivion? And I said, basically, dude, the experience is almost exactly the same, but less refined.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It really is. There's not a huge difference between the two. The combat
still
is a bit
great,
more...
great, though, because you get Sean Bean and Captain Picard.
Exactly.
Boromir and Pat Kent.
And Zod.
Yeah, yeah. Zod, let's not forget Zod. But your Lord and Master. Okay.
So, yeah, John, sorry. You were saying about Reckoning and Skyrim?
Yeah, well, I mean, I was just saying, you know, I could never get into these types of games, and now I'm kind of getting into them. Right? And I designed my character after my wife, because she's a huge Fable fan, right?
Okay, yeah.
Who was kind of walked away from games for a little while after Fable 2 came out and sucked. And now I'm fighting with her for the controller. Right?
It's something I could actually see Sarah getting into as well if she sat down with her.
But
right?
It's messing with me, man, because I'm playing, like, I designed a character to be a, you know, rogue slash mage. And then Elizabeth picks it up, and of course, what does she do? Grab a giant broadsword.
It's so cool that you can do that with the game. It's so cool how quickly you can, and effectively, I might add, you can switch roles.
Yeah.
Very effectively. You wanted to, you know, you're roaming through the woods as a fighter, you pick up a robe, and you decide, hey, I want to try mage. Bam.
Yeah, and I love how you can reuse your points.
Yeah,
go and switch stuff around, right?
Yeah,
just so you don't have to start the game over.
Yeah, you get a few thousand dollar, a few thousand gold coins, I should say. You can go to a Fate Weaver, unassign all your points, and reassign.
Yeah,
you know, which
that's
is pretty
cool.
Cool.
Yeah,
it's pretty neat.
I like that.
Pretty neat. Option.
And you can do it as much as you want.
Yeah,
you know, like okay, I want to start using sorcery. I go to a Fate Weaver, I pay my 1300 or whatever it is it costs, and then I just go reassign all my points. And then I decide, hey, I'm going back to my fighter. Just go back and do it again.
Yeah, that's cool.
It's really neat.
I also, for review purposes, played Never Dead. All I'm going to say about that is next time I'm going to go somewhere and pay people money to kick me in the nuts. just kick me in the nuts and just let me keep my money.
I would too.
Right? Okay, I would. This game, it's the video game equivalent of being bricked in the mouth. It's just, it's
that's it's disgusting. Just,
it's just it's absolutely rubbish. Just horrible. Not even like game design is bad. The idea behind it is bad. Whatever street cred that stop teasing me with it. we've got the binary domain demo downloaded,
and that little tease screen is the coolest thing I've ever seen.
Pretty cool. Too bad you guys can't see it.
Ha ha.
Go download the demo.
Yeah, and then just sit on your TV screen.
Yeah.
It's whatever street cred they would have gained by having a Megadeth track on there is thrown out a window by all the annoying J-pop that precedes it.
Is there actually a Megadeth track in the game?
Yes, there is.
Oh, okay.
But like the opening credits, it's actually used the song Never Dead from 13, which is a decent album.
It's not bad.
Yeah.
But I Megadeth are so mainstream now. It's not funny anyway.
Yeah.
I'm too counterculture for that. I'll go listen to some Metallica because they're not mainstream enough.
Okay, I thought you were. What was that band you were today? Oh God, I can't even remember their name. Bathory.
Oh, I don't freaking know. I don't know who we're talking about. I just saw some dead guy who was compared to some dead chick and thought, you know what? That's right. That's true. So you know, there it is. Anyway, you played Never Dead. It sucked.
It sucked. And then moving on to something else that some people are going to tell you sucked, and I'm going to tell you different. I bought and paid for, with real money, Twisted Metal.
Boo!
Shut up.
Indifference.
Fool.
Shut up. The amount of hours I sank into Twisted Metal 2, I had to do it.
And well, there you go. Yeah. That's what
I'm not a huge...
As long as you don't mind playing the same game again, John, 20 years later.
I think I would have preferred to use Vigilante 8.
Vigilante 8, that was a good game.
I don't think I ever really played much of it.
Well, I don't remember playing a whole lot
of it. Twisted Metal in the 70s, basically.
Yeah.
I'm just not a car combat guy.
Yeah. No, I just... I mean, I've only played it a few hours, you know, and only as of this recording, it only came out yesterday. The single player campaign, outside of the three absolutely fantastic boss fights, and that's coming from a guy who loves boss fights, it just, a lot of it feels like, you know, going through the motions, just, they handle it kind of like the Mortal Kombat story, where you don't actually pick a character, it just
switches automatically.
Didn't
Twisted Metal Black do that too, though?
No, Twisted Metal Black had...
You picked a character?
You picked a character.
Okay.
Right? Every character can drive every vehicle in the game, so, I mean, you can be playing as Mr. Grimm and get in the ice cream truck. Right?
That means nothing to me.
No, it's a little bit of a... takes a little bit of the wind out of the sails.
Yeah, well, I mean...
But, I mean, the cars are bigger characters than the characters themselves.
It's still, you know, like, okay, you got Sweet Tooth, who's a sadistic clown with a fire on his head.
Yeah.
And you would think he would be driving an ice cream truck with an evil clown on the top of it.
Yeah, and you got Mr. Grimm as the death-obsessed motorcycle rider, who you figure would stick with his motorcycle. Especially since the motorcycle has a giant skull on the front of it and is called Reaper.
Yeah. Right? See? That doesn't really make much sense. Yeah.
And, I mean, there's some really cool stuff in the single-player campaign. They pretty much lift the Dreadnought scene out of Death Race. Right? With a vehicle that you then unlock and get to use.
Nice.
Right? The Juggernaut.
Very cool.
And but, yeah, it just feels like going through the motions to unlock stuff. The multiplayer, on the other hand, is... in this current climate of, you know, Me Too first-person shooters, and, you know, we're kind of experiencing now a bit of the sugar crash from Call of Duty. You know, despite the high reviews, you're getting major game sites like IGN putting up articles on why Call of Duty needs to change. Right?
Yeah, I think that's just kind of being contrarian.
Yeah. Well, you know all about contrarian.
Yeah.
I just think it's a breath of fresh air. I really enjoyed the multiplayer. Now, you know, people are going to complain, oh, there's only 8 maps. The maps are 5 to 10 times the size of anything in a first-person shooter, and you can play sections of them.
Yeah, I heard there was, like, some kind of a customization or something in it.
There's customization stuff, and it's unfortunate that, you know, there's only really a couple game modes online. You got your classic Twisted Metal Deathmatch, which is what everyone's going to be playing.
Yeah.
And you got this really cool mode called Nuke, which is kind of like Capture the Flag, where you... you kind of steal one of the faction leaders, and then if you bring them back to your home base, you earn the right to fire a tomahawk missile at this giant Burning Man style effigy of whatever the other team is. Score 3 hits with the missile, you win the match. Right?
Okay.
I played a game of it last night, and it really reminded me of our old Blood Gulch days with Halo.
Right on.
Just. That kind of friendliness. If I had any major complaints about the game...
It looks like ass.
Yeah, it really does.
It looks like warmed over ass in leather chaps on a hot summer's day in Arizona.
Now, it runs buttery smooth.
Looking like that.
And the environments are completely destructible. Right? But... It comes with a download voucher. The first run of the game is the limited edition, right?
Yeah.
They all come with a download voucher, blah, for Twisted Metal
Black. A scratch-out coupon thingy.
Yeah, for Twisted Metal Black, which came out in 2001.
And still looks awesome.
Yeah. And still, it looks comparable, actually.
Yeah, and you could crash an airliner in that one.
Yeah. I don't even think they did, like, a remastering on it. I just think it's Twisted Metal Black.
I don't know. It's probably, like, they probably treated it the same as the PS2 classics.
Yeah. But it looks comparable. And that's sad.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
I actually think Twisted Metal Black shows a little more originality in art style and stuff. Like,
no, Twisted Metal Black's art style was outside of the cool chick with the mask.
It just looked a bit, it looked a bit darker. Yeah. The vehicles and stuff looked a bit darker and dingier and stuff.
Bleh.
Oh, well, I'm talking, like you said, the vehicles were the characters.
Yeah. And actually, Black had a lot of really cool vehicles. But, I mean, Twisted Metal, the relaunch, had a lot of really cool vehicles in it, too. The multiplayer's fantastic. My major complaint is actually the control scheme. If somebody needed to tell Jaffe that, you know, if he's if it's going to be based completely around vehicles, he probably should have taken some control hints from like a modern racing game. I hate having my gas and brake mapped to the face buttons. You know, I'm kind of.
Why can't we use the triggers?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they got the weapons and weapon switching mapped to the trigger. So if you move the face buttons around, then you got to move that around. You know, there's just so much you need to do. Some vehicles in it have alternate modes you can switch to, with so you got to switch their special weapon, then activate the special weapon to switch to a different mode. You've got the getting back to the Reaper, the motorcycle. His special attack is throwing a chainsaw. Right? Whips a chainsaw at them, and it's the most damaging special in the game. To get all the damage out of it, you've actually got to you pop a wheelie with the motorcycle. So he drags the chainsaw behind him, and the thing catches on fire. Right? And then you whip it at him. To pull a wheelie off, as you're moving, you've got to hold back on the left stick. It's really, really clumsy.
That all sounds very confusing to me.
Yeah, it's incredible. you go to the options menu and look at the controls, and you get a picture of the PS3 controller, man, and the rest of the screen is just a wall of text.
Looks like the manual for astronauts going up in the early Apollo missions.
Yeah, exactly. It's really confusing, and it's just a car combat game. It could have been streamlined so much more.
There's no need to have anything other than gas, brake, shoot.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the big thing, what I saw, like, based on gameplay videos and stuff, not based on first-hand experience, because I haven't played it and I have no intention to.
The
driving mechanics look extremely clumsy and unrealistic. Like, there's no physics or anything applied. They turn on, like, a weird axis. And, I mean, I know this was an issue with the G4 TV review. If you're going to have a car combat game, you need a driving mechanic. Your game can't play like a first-person shooter.
And, like, I think, you know, if they wanted to have... Yes, it's going to need an arcade-y feel. Eat Sleep Play should have sat down and played nothing but Burnout. Right? They should have sat down and played Burnout and Need for Speed Hot Pursuit for, like, 3 months.
So, two things we can take away from John's comments on Twisted Metal. If you like... Or three things. Number one, if you've liked the Twisted Metal series up to now, you will be pleased. You will be satisfied. You will be happy. It plays like Twisted Metal. Congratulations. Number two, the game should not look like this much ass. And number three, it should feel like you're driving a car.
But obviously, and maybe somebody can answer, did this start out its life as a downloadable title?
Possible. Who knows?
Because I'm wondering, that's the only excuse I can have as to why the graphics are so
shitty.
Yeah.
And it's amazing because I remember when Warhawk originally came out, I was thinking to myself, Warhawk's
pretty
awesome. Oh man,
that'd be a sweet character included in the game.
Yeah, really. But like, I was thinking to myself, Warhawk looks pretty cool. But, like, it doesn't have that same... even at the time when it was released, it didn't have that same real panache that, like, you know, you had games like Heavenly Sword, you had games like Uncharted, Gran Turismo 5 Prologue, and all these, like, really, really snazzy-looking games. And Warhawk was kind of like, well, you know, it's nice-looking, but it's not, like, drop-dead gorgeous. Twisted Metal makes Warhawk, which was released, I believe, in, what, fall 2007, look like a
launch title, man.
Warhawk?
Warhawk was a launch title.
Was Warhawk a launch title?
I'm pretty sure it was.
I don't think so. I think it was the second year. I think it was right after I bought my PS3.
Okay.
It came out. But, I mean, Warhawk also was their first downloadable title.
Yeah.
And that, like, Twisted Metal makes Warhawk look like a work of art.
The big thing I'd have to say about it, it's, to me, it's an 8 out of 10. Right?
Yeah.
4 out of 5. It's,
you're a fan.
I'm a fan. It's, if you are, if you're looking for a brand new flavor multiplayer fix... Look no further.
Warhawk is your brand.
I kind of wish they made unlocking the stuff with, because you can still unlock extra guns and extra cars through multiplayer, but it's handled like Call of Duty.
Yeah,
you know, you got the, you know, I'm not tier 7 in Twisted Metal yet. So you there's
I haven't
experience
prestiged
yet. Yeah, I'm not. If you're not that good, you're not going to be unlocking stuff. So the story mode kind of becomes a necessity. And, you know, it's a bit of fun, but it's nothing spectacular.
What about you, Kev? You been playing anything? Or you got anything else to add, John?
No, that's it all. I don't think I want to talk about the Darkness 2.
I've been playing a few games. I downloaded the demo for Scary Girl, which is a 2D platformer, kind of reminiscent of, you know, the cartoon Ruby Gloom?
Oh my god.
You guys know that? It's kind of like Ruby Gloom the video game.
Sarah would probably absolutely love it.
Yeah, it's cute. It reminds me a little of Little Big Planet, actually.
I'm going to sit there and say, can I have my PlayStation back?
It's kind of fun. The first episode of Back to the Future is now free.
I actually played through the first bit of Back to the Future on the Wii.
Did you?
Yeah, and it was awesome, but the Wii couldn't run it for shit.
No way.
No. Really choppy.
I played through it on my iOS, on my iPad. Oh, man, so much fun. I just love being back in that universe again. You know, seeing those characters and hearing that music. Like, when the music first cut in, I was like, oh, yeah, Back to the Future. This is great. You know? It's one of those franchises that's never going to be rebooted in terms of movies. It almost feels protected to me. I was talking to my brother about this. Back to the Future feels like a protected franchise.
For now.
It hasn't been ruined yet.
When we're about 55, maybe like mid-50s to late-50s,
yeah,
they'll announce a Back to the Future remake.
Oh, God.
And we'll shake our fists and we'll say, hey, you kids, get off our lawn. You know?
Take your hoverboards and...
scram. But make like a tree and get out of here. You know? But yeah, anyway,
Mattel is actually releasing
a hoverboard. Yeah. I saw it.
Yeah, which is pretty exciting.
Now you just need a pair of $10,000 sneakers to
wear while you're hoverboarding.
So I played that. I've also been playing an awful lot. I've sunk a lot of time into a little game called Tiny Tower.
Oh my god. Is this a PlayStation game, or
It's on my iPad.
Okay, alright.
It's kind of like SimCity. You know, it's a sim game, except you're building a tower. And each floor of the tower, you assign something different to it, like retail, service, residential, whatever, right? The people that move into the residence, you give them jobs in the different shops and stuff like that, right?
Okay.
And you have to stock the shops and keep them stocked to get more money to build more floors, to get more people in, and it just spirals out of control, man. Anyway, my tower is like 15 stories now, and the thing about it is, when you're restocking your shops or you're building a floor, it counts down the time it takes in real time. So let's say my hat store, I have a hat store.
It's kind of like Eve.
Oh, yeah?
Eve Online, when you're training skills, you train skills in real time?
And it's real time, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's say I got my little hat store, and I want to stock it with trucker hats, which is like the basic kind of hat for the hat store. It'll take 5 minutes in real time for it to be stocked, right?
Okay.
And then you can stock it.
Man, those sweatshop kids work fast.
I tell you. But if I'm building another floor on, it might take 2 hours. That kind of thing, right?
Okay.
And you can speed it up by spending the types of currency that are in the game.
Man, those Hindu contractors work fast.
But the nice thing about it is the game, when you're not playing it, it still counts down.
So it is like Eve.
Yeah?
Yeah. You can queue up so many skills for training or whatever.
That's cool. That's cool. They're logged. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It still ranks up, right?
What is not good about it, of course, is if you have the notifications on your iPad, it will ding to let you know a certain item is ready to be stocked or your floor has been built.
You know, your trucker caps are in stock.
Even if it's 4 o'clock in the morning and...
you're sleeping.
And you're sleeping and your iPad is on your table next to you and you hear this little ding and you go, oh, my tiny tower. The hats are ready to be restocked. Okay. Going back to bed now.
Ice cream soda shop is all out of malt.
Yeah, I don't have one of those yet. I don't have one of those. It's kind of cool. Occasionally, like...
when are terrorists going to take over?
I don't know, man, but I've seen some weird people show up at the tower, actually.
Who said we were terrorists?
Occasionally, these little
I am an exceptional thief.
Occasionally, these little sprite figures, they'll come into the elevator and you send them up to whatever floors and you get tips and stuff, right?
Okay.
But sometimes they'll sneak in pop culture characters. One of the first characters that showed up in the elevator was Indiana Jones.
Awesome!
And
okay,
like,
I gotta play this game
holy
right
crap.
Now.
Well, I've only seen him once.
You let me know when John McClane sneaks in.
I've seen Indiana Jones, Super Mario... I saw a Star Trek character, actually, about an hour ago while I was on it. I was like, what? That's a guy from Star Trek. What the hell? I saw a guy dressed up in a ghost costume, and he didn't have legs.
Maybe he was a ghost. He could have been a ghost.
So, that's kind of a fun game. It's free. There are microtransactions if you want to buy the certain type of currency that speeds stuff up. But you can get that currency in the game anyway.
Stop your headset much faster.
Yeah. But you can still get the get that currency in-game. It just takes longer, right? So you don't have to really pay for it if you don't want to.
I'm downloading this shit right now.
Yeah, it's fun, man.
No, you're right. I'm not. I'm downloading the Starhawk beta.
You are.
It looks awesome.
That's cool.
Maybe that's like the name of an 80s cartoon, man. Starhawk.
It totally is. And of course, I am playing Skyrim still. Actually, I've dove head first right back in. I dove a keened right back into Skyrim, man. My brother has been playing so much of it that I watch him play and go, man, he doesn't have a clue. I gotta play more. And then I sit down and play it after him. I am now, not only am I, you know.
And then Tiny Tower dings
you. The Tiny Tower dings.
Yeah, someone tells you your hats are in.
Not only am I the Dovahkiin, you know, savior of Skyrim, and Tamriel, I guess. Leader of the Companions. Head of the College of Winterhold. Guild Master of the Thieves Guild.
Man, that's a lot of hats to wear.
I'm the chosen one. No matter what I go into, I know that I'm going to be the chosen one of this group.
That's a tad unrealistic, don't you think?
It is. I started playing the Dark Brotherhood quest.
Star Wars prequels. You're the chosen one, Anakin!
I started playing the Dark Brotherhood quest, and I won't give any spoilers, but there is a certain thing in the Dark Brotherhood. And as soon as I heard about this certain thing, I was like, that's totally going to be me.
Yeah.
I know that I'm definitely going to be, and of course I am. I am the chosen one.
Yeah.
But actually, the Thieves quest, I gotta say, I have never played through any of the Thieves Guild stuff in previous
Thieves Guild stuff in Oblivion was amazing.
Well, I gotta say, man, in Skyrim, it's like playing a different game. Because I played the whole game, you know, you're just dungeon crawling, you're doing stuff, da 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 da. But as soon as I started playing Thieves Guild, it just felt like a different game, and I got really enthused in it. And there was a certain level near the end game of the Thieves quests, right? Where even the art style of the certain locations that I was in, there was a change in the color palette of something I hadn't really seen before.
Cool.
It almost felt like this section of the game had some different eyes on it.
Nice.
You know, it was really, really fresh and really fun to play. And I'm getting the same kind of vibe from the Dark Brotherhood stuff. Like, shit's going down, man, and I'm loving every bit of it. Killing a lot of people, but... It's nice.
So it goes.
So it goes.
I think a note for future Elder Scrolls games.
Yeah.
Allow one faction lead per character.
Really?
Find a way so that, like, basically, once you reach a certain point. Well, I mean, they did it with the Civil War quest. Once you get so far, you can't switch sides anymore.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, I think they should do the same thing with the faction quests. Basically. You can only become the leader of one faction. Instead of becoming the leader of every faction. Because, number one, it gives you impetus to make up new characters and stuff like that, which is cool. Roll different characters. And maybe have prerequisites. You know, like, okay, you want to join the Winterhold Mages College and all that kind of stuff? You got to have a prerequisite magic skill, right? Like, you have to be a magic user character.
Oh, that's true.
Because,
like, I'm the Archmage of the College of Winterhold.
Yeah.
But there's no, I am not a mage.
Yeah, exactly. it's stupid.
Yeah.
It really is. You know,
what I would say, I would change that slightly. I would say, okay, you can only be the leader of one guild.
Yep.
But change it so you can still play through all the guild quests, but you don't become the leader at the end.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So instead of being offered the leadership or whatever, you get some sort of reward instead.
I think the issue, basically, once you've opened one, I think they should cut you off at a certain point.
Yeah.
With the other ones.
See, I'm the kind of person, I put 100 hours into one of these games. Well, I don't really want to go back to go through a bunch of the guild quests. Because I want to do them all in one go with my character, you know?
Fair enough. And that's understandable. Yeah. But, I mean, now think about it.
On the other hand, you don't...
If you didn't have that choice, if you didn't have that openness, that flexibility, you'd probably be dying to sit down, create a mage character, and do the mage guild stuff. Just so you could get that different perspective on the game.
That's true.
Because what it's doing is, I mean, you know, you've got this Thieves Guild, you got this Assassin's Guild, you got this Fighters Guild, you got this Mages Guild.
Yeah.
But depending on your character, you're not really getting a different perspective at all.
Well, the thing that I like about Skyrim, actually, just to play devil's advocate with you.
No sweat. That's what makes it interesting.
Yeah. Is that when it comes to the College Winterhold and the Thieves Quest one, those intersect with the main quest. right?
Yeah, yeah.
You have to do certain things with those skills to continue the main quest, right?
Yeah.
It's almost like the game guides you in that direction to start you on doing these faction quests.
Yeah.
Which I really like, actually. Because if not, I probably never would have went close to the Thieves Guild had I not had to go down there
and do a specific
to do a specific thing for them, right?
Yeah. This is true. This is also true. And a bit of related Skyrim stuff, I might as well throw us in there because you were talking about Skyrim.
Right.
Our condolences from the boys at Blast Processing on a somber note to Bethesda Game Studios.
Mm.
They lost one of their lead artists this past week.
Yep.
Passed away, Adam Adamowicz, who was very, very involved in Oblivion and extremely involved in Fallout 3 and Skyrim. He was basically, you know, like kind of the artistic vision for both games. So I bet they're going to feel that one. That's kind of a drag. It's pretty sad.
That is a drag, yeah.
But they put up an awesome, really touching memorial on their official website for him, where, you know, they had some, you know, the nice kind words about him and a really nice little eulogy or whatever for him. But then below that, they had comments from a lot of the development team, like their favorite stories and stuff. And some of them were laugh out loud hysterical.
Oh,
like,
that's nice.
Like, really, really cool. Really, really classy. Really nice touch. And, you know, it's not something you think about very often in the games industry and stuff like that. We don't know these people and stuff like that. But, you know, this guy, how many people have been playing Skyrim
since November 11th?
You know, like, how many people have lost themselves in this world?
How many memes?
Yeah. How many internet memes have been born out of Skyrim, you know? And this guy, like, he played a very significant role in that, like, the hundreds upon hundreds upon thousands upon millions of hours of enjoyment that people have drawn from that game, you know? Like I don't know if... I'm sure he seemed like the kind of guy who was humble enough that he wouldn't notice it, but, you know, like, that's a game, that's the kind of game. You're talking about a game that definitely had a big effect on a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, brought a lot of enjoyment to people, and he was a large part of it. So it's kind of, you know, sad, but, you know, we wish him all the best.
Well, man, that's what every designer wants to achieve.
Yeah.
And he did it.
He did.
You know? Mm-hmm. On a related note, John Severin, comic book artist, passed away this past week.
Yes, yeah.
As well. It got me thinking, you know, this is not really video game related, but comic book related. I'm going to talk about it anyway.
Well, you know, we're geeks.
A lot of those old-time, classic, epic comic book artists are now in their 70s and 80s.
Yeah, and I mean, it's easy for us to, you know, like, I find, and this kind of pisses me off, to be honest with you. This is that hipster bullshit mentality. They all talk about Steve Ditko and Jack Kirby and all this stuff. We weren't alive to see the rise of Steve Kirby or Jack Kirby or Steve Ditko or any of these guys. You know, we weren't around. So guys our age, you know what I mean? We came up in the comic book boom of the 80s and then the glut of the 90s. Mm-hmm. You know, like, we were there for, you know, the McFarlanes of the world and the Liefelds of the world and, like, the Romita Juniors and, you know, like, all of these guys. You know, like, there's, like, Frank Miller. We were here for Frank and all that. Jim
Ninja Lee, Turtles.
Ninja Turtles. You know, like, all
Secret
of this stuff.
War represent?
Yeah. But even, I mean, we're getting up there now. I mean, it's easy for us to kind of think, not to get all wistful and introspective. But, I mean, you know, I look at, I've been reading through the 80s G.I. Joe, the Marvel G.I. Joe. I started and reread through the whole run of G.I. Joe. And Rod Wiggum was a guy, I always really liked his work. This is a guy who's well up there now. This is a guy who's pretty much retired and, you know, like, and you don't think about it.
Yeah.
You know, you really, like, to me, G.I. Joe was a week ago.
Yeah.
How old is Larry Hama? He's got to be in his 60s.
Hama's got to be up there too, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Hama's a Vietnam vet, for God's sake.
I mean, even some of these guys like Severin, who was, apparently he was 90, were still working. He was working on Hellboy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It blows my mind, man. I think in the next few years, all of these guys who started doing comics and made comics popular, you know, in the 60s, they're all going to start to die.
And I mean, not to be morbid, but how many years does Stan Lee have? You know?
Let's not talk about that. It's going to be a very sad day.
There are maybe, like, okay, there are maybe four people right now on the planet in terms of entertainment,
right,
who would be huge if they passed away tomorrow. It would be like a huge global outpouring of grief and whatever else, you know?
Man, Stan Lee is the happiest guy.
He's definitely,
like,
one of them.
If I'm feeling sad, all I gotta do is think about Stan Lee saying something, anything.
Excelsior!
And he, with so much of this Boy
Hello,
Scout enthusiasm.
True believers!
Exactly. And I'll
Kevin,
feel better.
What are you frowning for?
You're a true believer, Kevin.
What I invented, Spider-Man.
Well, you see! I love the guy. I mean,
I think he's great.
But, I mean, he's one of those, I guess you call him a national treasure.
Oh, my
you know?
God. Oh, yeah. Like the way you just said that, well, he's like a scrawny Hulk Hogan.
But he is. He's like a national treasure. You know, him, you got Clint Eastwood.
Yeah.
And not many others, man, when you think about it, you know? But, yeah, no, it's kind of a drag.
Clint Eastwood.
It is kind of a drag.
I had a tear in my eye for a Super Bowl commercial, and I'm not American.
You know what? The same thing with a lot of directors. This is something you guys... I'm going to give you guys an idea for your next podcast now.
Okay.
A lot of these directors are getting up there, too, man.
Yeah.
Like, how old is Spielberg now?
Spielberg is 60s, early 60s. I think.
Right?
Yeah.
How old is...
Ridley Scott's 74,
I think. And what about Francis Ford
Coppola's up there, too, yeah. He's like late 60s.
I mean, they're all getting old, man.
Yeah. These guys, these boys of summer are not boys anymore.
That's right.
Yeah, but Ridley Scott is the Lich King, so...
No, John Carpenter is the Lich King.
Big trouble.
In China.
Feel the
anyway. Ken was talking about Skyrim.
Skyrim. Yeah, I'm back into it, man. And as soon as I finish the Dark Brotherhood, I think I'll be done. I did get all the Dragon Priest masks. Which is a lot of fun. There are still places that I haven't been to Falkreath yet. That's another city, isn't it?
Falkreath is awesome.
I've never even been there, man.
It's really cool.
I've got to go.
There's
there.
A Daedric quest there. That's awesome.
And apparently there are also like orc outposts.
Yeah.
That you've got to like become blood kin. I only found this out today.
I've been everywhere, man. Have you seen my map?
Yes, I've seen your map.
I spent like 3 Sundays. Like 8 or 10 hours just wandering.
Just walking, yeah.
Walking the earth like Kane and Kung Fu.
Ha!
The Dovahkiin does not sleep. He walks.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, I've got to do that still. But once that's done, I think that's going to be it. I mean, there's no real quest line for the Bard's College, is there?
You just give me a...
Yeah.
There is?
There's going to be another Skyrim meme now.
Hmm?
Kevin just inadvertently created another Skyrim meme.
Yeah?
Yeah, you're going to be like Chuck Norris facts about the Dovahkiin.
Oh, God, no.
Oh, no. No way, man.
Stab.
Let's
Stab.
Not open up that can of
Stab.
Worms.
I'm sorry, it's open. It's already happened.
No, I'm putting
coins
the worms.
Coins and minted.
We're going straight to the news.
John, you're streets ahead.
You say that, you're obviously streets.
So there is a quest line with the Bard's College, aside from King Olaf's verse.
It's not as, like, as in-depth and stuff as
right.
the other ones, but yeah, there is.
Because it's not mentioned under quests. Like, you don't see
it's
Bard's College.
I think they're missed quests.
Okay.
But, like, I do have another one now with them.
Cool.
I'm looking for something for another guy in there and stuff, you know. They're okay. More like the Radiant Quests, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay. Here we go. It's time for the news.
Time for the news.
News!
Wish I could use a little good news today. There's a local paper. No, I'm going to just give you
I don't even know what you're talking about anymore. You lost me.
Anne Murray, man. Anne Murray.
Oh my god. Oh! Oh, my brain! Somebody get me some, like,
this is
sand or something.
This is Jim Furlong.
Now you're. Now, see, we're losing.
Oh, I got a story.
Now.
I got a story. My mom's never going to listen to this.
Okay.
Jim Furlong, like, hit on my mom at a wedding back in the 60s or 70s. He had a thing for her, eh?
Really?
Jim Furlong.
Who nobody listening to this podcast, even the Newfoundlanders, knows.
Gosh. YouTube Jim Furlong. Yeah, he is literally like a real life Ned Flanders.
No, man, I like
drier than Ned Flanders.
The one I like, and actually, sad day for Newfoundlanders today. But and this is how it came up. Dan Moore brought it up. Actually, I was watching Ocean Ranger clips this morning.
Oh yeah.
And the old Milton Nash. You remember Milton Nash, the old CBC newscaster?
No,
from here and now. He was awesome. Milton Nash was. It's kind of like a. Jim Furlong, you know, from the archives, kind of, he's got that same, but for CBC News, this is Milton Nash, you know, like, but, yeah, it's, anyway.
Hmm.
Yeah, Ocean Ranger anniversary, 30th anniversary today, it was one of the two biggest tragedies to ever strike Newfoundland, in particular, so, you know, the other being Beaumont Hamel.
Yeah.
But, you know, we won't dwell on that, because it's not game-related, and, hey, anybody not living in Newfoundland doesn't care.
Seriously, though, Wikipedia, pay your respects.
Yeah. You bastards. So in the news.
The news.
Not to go from like low to high or anything. Release date news.
Alright.
Oh boy, new games.
Joe Madureira, has decided to give our own illustrious Mr. John Mercer a birthday gift this year. On June 22nd, the day of John's birth, Darksiders 2 will strike home consoles.
Awesome.
Say thank you, John.
Thank you, Joe. my wife is going to have a work cut out for her to beat that. She'll probably just buy Darksiders.
Joe, he is willing to honk on your bobo.
Joe, if you really want to impress me, go back and finish Battle Chasers.
For Kev, Assassin's Creed 3.
I haven't even played Brotherhood or 2 yet. No,
okay, well, never mind.
Brotherhood or Revelations.
More for me, then.
Well, I'm still going to want it. Okay. Maybe by then I'll
have... You haven't played Aspro?
Ask what? Aspro? No, I haven't. Oh, dude.
All the cool kids play Aspro.
I Aspro? Want to. Those are games I really want to play. I just have
Assassin's Creed 3, October 30th of this year. Nobody knows anything about Assassin's Creed 3 yet, other than it's not going to be Ezio or Altair.
That's right.
And rumor has it, popular rumor right now, I mean, there's been a ton of rumors. There was everything from Victorian-era England...
Ancient China. That'd be cool.
Egypt, London during the Blitz, which I thought would have been freaking amazing.
Egypt would be cool. All the parkour around the pyramids.
I mean, there's been a bunch of stories, but the big rumor now, the popular rumor now, is American Revolution.
That's cool.
Which I'm down with. I'm down with that. Yeah. So that's on October 30th of this year. For Steve, Risen 2 Dark Waters, April 24th of this year.
John's falling asleep. I was actually faking that time.
Yeah, I'm zing! He wasn't 20 minutes ago.
It's all right. I had a sub and two hamburgers. I'm gonna fall asleep in 5 seconds.
For Steve, Risen 2 Dark Waters, April 24th for North America.
Yeah,
I think I may be importing it in because the UK is getting a really nice looking collector's edition that I want. Go figure. And also for Steve, Armored Core 5 on March 20th. I guess this one's kind of for John, too, because John also has a thing for giant robots stomping the shit out of each other, don't you, Jeff?
Oh, dude, I got a steel rod in my pants already.
So there we go. I can't wait. I'm pumped. And the newest trailer for Armored Core 5 actually looks pretty freaking
awesome. I didn't see it, but I listened to it. It sounded fantastic. I heard explosions.
If you're going to bring it heavy.
Very exciting news. Ed Boon and Seth Killian light the Twitter sphere.
No, just the Twitters.
The Twitters on fire. With talk of, could it be Street Fighter versus Mortal Kombat? Or after that relaunch, would it be Mortal Kombat versus Street Fighter? In other news, someone from Tecmo has batted around the phrase Dead or Alive versus Virtua Fighter. Just because they can. Should they? And does anyone care?
I don't. No. But I'm also kind of thinking...
I don't even know. Like, Mortal Kombat...
Should Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat really...
No, it wouldn't work.
Should it be a thing?
No, it's not like... You know what... The Tekken project they're doing.
Tekken is Street Fighter in 3D, let's face it.
Yeah.
Tekken is Street Fighter in 3D.
Yeah. And
so that's a good fit. Neither one of the games has continuity that makes a lick of goddamn sense.
No.
They both have characters that are completely batshit crazy. That's the second time in this episode I've used that expression.
And that new game looks like holy shit awesome.
It does. It looks like holy shit awesome.
Yeah, but no... Words can't describe how much I loved Mortal Kombat last year. Right?
One of the best fighting games I've ever played, and yeah. I traditionally am a
and to me,
fanatical hater of Mortal Kombat.
Ed Boon earned himself a seat at the table.
He did.
Right? He gets the mad props. Boys. And I said on the site when we put the news up, you know, that he was meeting for lunch with Seth Killian, and I said, you know, Ed Boon has earned the right to have lunch with whoever the fuck he wants to.
I like his Twitter, his tweet, whatever the hell the cool kids call it.
Oh, he loves the interviews with him on the Making of Mortal Kombat. Ed's a funny bastard.
He is, but like the whole, you know, it started off with, and I mean, and for all we know, it could be a joke. It could just be the two of them having a bit of fun, you know.
And it probably is knowing Seth killed him.
Yeah, and the whole thing, you know, Seth basically congratulated Ed on winning, I think it was a BAFTA for Mortal Kombat. And, you know, had said, you know, next time I'm in Chicago, sausages are on me or something like that. And
hot dogs, man.
Yeah, Chicago, whatever, hot dogs, whatever. And Ed Boon said something along the lines of, yeah, our first meeting, we get to discuss whether it's SF versus MK or MK versus SF, you know? And, it's kind of a tongue-in-cheek comment, but you got to wonder, with all the stuff that's been going on Twitter lately, Yeah. Is it the real deal? You know, is it something that we can take
to
the bank?
Well, who's the guy from the Japanese fellow from Capcom who's heading up the Street Fighter side of
Ono?
He's just crazy enough to do it.
Yeah, like, he is. He's pretty nuts.
You want to talk about certifiable?
But what do you do? Do you do an M-rated Street Fighter, or do you do a T-rated Mortal Kombat?
Well, no, we've already seen a T-rated Mortal Kombat, and
it was not cool.
It was not cool.
No.
I can't see Capcom going M-rated with Street Fighter. I really can't see them doing it.
You know, they're both... It's apples and oranges, right? They're both fruits. Yeah. But would you put both of those fruits in your mouth at the same time?
I don't know if
that is the worst thing anybody has ever said on this
podcast. We have a new bobsled.
That's even worse than the bobsled reference.
All right, let's move on to another piece of news. Now that I've ruined that one.
You ruined everything!
I was using a metaphor, an apples and oranges metaphor.
Okay.
Okay, so by now, I'm sure everyone listening to this has heard about the Tim Schafer Kickstarter project. Tim Schafer.
Which we actually got in ahead of all the major websites on our Lost episode.
Yes, on the Lost episode. Last processing on the Lost episode. So Tim Schafer, creator of Psychonauts Monkey Island. Did he do Monkey Island?
He was involved. He was like
a
programmer or something. He wasn't the creator, but he
is
involved.
However, the creator of Full Throttle.
Yeah. Right. Full Throttle, Grim Fandango.
Right.
Brutal Legend, Psychonauts.
That's right.
So these parts we call him Tim Fandango.
He put up a very charming little video asking for basically crowdsourced funding for a new point and click adventure game. I was asking for 300,000?
400,000.
400,000. And three of that would be for development of the game, and one of that would go towards a documentary about the making of the game by Two Player Productions, which we're doing a documentary about the creation of Minecraft, actually.
Yeah.
Good guys. And the way it was going to work, for those of you not in the know out there, I'm sure everybody already knows this, is that they would actually... The people that donated money would actually get some input on the design of the game.
Yeah. Right?
So everything would be online, and you could comment, there'd be forums on designs and, you know, art direction and everything else. So that's really cool. In like, the span of 2 days, they hit $1 million.
It was by the second day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty much
and
by the beginning of the second
the
day.
The last count that I saw was $1.7 million.
Yeah.
I mean, they've gotten to the end of the month. It was a month-long Kickstarter.
Right.
So it's conceivable they might hit $2 million on this thing.
Which is insane.
Which is crazy.
Yeah.
I think it's cool, man. Whatever. Like, you know, it might be fun. I'll download it on my iPad and play it. Speaking of, it's going to be coming to mobile devices, PC, and...
Mac.
Yep, that's right. And it's not going to be any DRM on that, baby.
I'm... Not to be a contrarian, or not to be negative, not to be negative, Nelly, you know.
Steve's going to be contrarian? No.
What?
No.
No.
I love Tim Schafer. I do.
It was a very charming video.
It was. It was a great video. And I love Tim Schafer. Like, as the quote-unquote whipping boy at a video game industry, the guy's had he's taken his knocks.
Yeah.
And I'm glad to see him succeed. Like, I mean, this is not a knock on Tim Schafer or Double Fine Productions.
Costume Quest. And Stacking were his other two ones.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And Iron Brigade, which
and
is
Iron
awesome.
Brigade, which is amazing, yeah. But I'm kind of two minds on it. Like, it's a great idea. It's a great concept. I like, again, not to diminish anything that he's accomplished here. Because I think, you know, kudos to Tim. Great accomplishment. Awesome accomplishment. Way to go.
You're Tim Schafer, you gotta take your victories where you can.
Yeah, exactly. But the kind of the not so pleasant, I guess, side of me can't help but think, you know, Kickstart is kind of something that was designed, you know, for indie gamers. It was for, like, you know, people starting up, like, you know, startup studios and stuff like this. It was for guys who really wanted to do something new and bring something new to the table and, you know, like, get out there, get their names known. You know, guys who, like, you know, games like Angry Birds and Limbo and Braid and all of this stuff all came to us from guys who were nobodies.
Right.
Who put a lot of hard work and found a way. You know, even, like, Sword and Sorcery. You know, it was another fine example. It was a bunch of guys from Toronto. Sword and Sworcery. Yeah, you know, it was a bunch of guys from Toronto who had no money, you know, and just found a way to persevere kind of thing. But when you put Tim Schafer's name on something, automatically, bam.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like if that were anybody else, even if that were the guy who created Braid, I can't remember his name right now.
Right.
Even if that were him, or if it were, you know, the guys who did Bastion.
Greg Kasavin.
Yeah, that wouldn't have hit a million in a day. No way. Not a chance. You know, it's just...
Everyone loves Tim.
And Tim, like, not to knock you, dude, because again, I love you. I love what you do. But you guys are out there. You're established. You know, I mean, no, Double Fine hasn't been the most successful company on the planet, but they've made their money.
No, they haven't been the most successful company on the planet, but you still got, you know, Microsoft comes to you and said, we're going to throw so many millions at you to make us a Sesame Street game.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah,
Double Fine have... When it comes to getting a point-and-click adventure made, they'd have no problem getting the money.
No. And
just putting the words together, Tim Schafer returns to his roots.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly.
And start thinking about Monkey Island, Full Throttle, and Grim Fandango. And
I mean, it's cool like that he kind of attempted to, you know, I guess, eliminate the middleman or whatever, you know? But it's kind of ballooned into something that it isn't. Mm. You know, a lot of people are trumpeting it as this big... You know, this is the end of game publishers, and this is, like, a new birth for independent game developers and stuff. It's like, okay, Kev, do me a favor.
Yeah.
Hop on Kickstarter tomorrow and try to raise $400,000 to make yourself a point-and-click adventure game. See how well that goes.
Man, I don't know how to make games.
But still, see how well it would go.
It's not going to go well.
You know, see how well that would work out for you.
Yeah. No, I got... Counterpoint. Get Joe to do it.
We'll put Joe Wo's picture up.
Joe Wo. Yeah, Joe Wo will have it in... 7 hours. Yeah.
Ladies, I'm trying to put together a dating sim.
A million in one day? I don't get out of bed for less than $3 million.
Oh. So yeah, that's how I feel about it. I mean, like, I'm sure it's going to be a great game. I love Schafer. I mean, point-and-click adventure games, I was weaned on them too, you know.
Remember how upset you were when you found out we almost had a Scott Pilgrim point-and-click adventure?
Oh, I was routed. I was severely routed. I mean, Scott Pilgrim as a Telltale Games point-and-click adventure game, I think that would have been fantastic.
That would have been fabulous. Probably
for somebody who hates comics.
Yeah, exactly. In sad news, Metal Gear Solid 4 Online will be ending this summer.
I didn't even know it existed until I read that.
Will I still be able to play Metal Gear Solid 4 offline?
You can. But the online version of the online gameplay of Metal Gear Solid 4 was actually pretty freaking awesome. And you know what? I'm as guilty as anybody else. It came, it went.
Yeah.
And that's it. You know, it was great, but it required considerably more investment than I was willing to give it. And it's kind of a drag. For those of you who are still clinging onto your Metal Gear Solid 4 online, you know, it's gone the way of Snake Eater. The online is now going to be...
Snake Eater.
So you know what? Grab your copy of Metal Gear Solid 4, sit through that lengthy install... The 10-minute install. Watch Snake smoke a cigarette for 10 minutes. And fire it up one last time.
Mm.
You know, for something to do.
It's pretty tasty. I think these are wine-tipped.
Snake!
Smoking can cause emphysema. Twisted Metal. Just released this week. Already a movie has been announced.
Oh, God.
Attached to direct... Brian Taylor of the critically acclaimed Neville Dean Taylor directing combination. The boys who brought us Crank, Crank 2 Electric Boogaloo, Gamer, the upcoming Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance.
Wow, a whole bunch of really bad movies.
Yeah, I'm hoping that people are saying maybe he's the talented side of the duo. They don't have any talent. besides a Twisted Metal movie, didn't Paul Anderson do that a couple years ago with Death Race?
I think so.
Yeah.
I'm inclined to agree.
Hmm.
Now, speaking of... I'm the guy in the trio who actually likes the new Twisted Metal. Don't! Don't do it! There's certain things...
Why didn't they just get Uwe Boll to make it?
How much you want to bet we see this, like, 10 years before we see an Uncharted movie? And that's just goddamn wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
That's all the cracks you make about Mark Wahlberg, man. He's never going to let that happen.
He's using his not unconsiderable Hollywood clout to make it not happen. Yo, you're not going to make an Uncharted movie until David O. Russell directs it and I star as Nathan Drake, okay? I learned that back in Southie when I was stealing cars in jail.
That's uncanny, Steve.
That's pretty good.
That is uncanny.
I just need a minute.
Just give me a minute.
Not you. No, there's a W in what.
Not you. I'm the one who's up here fighting. Not you. Not you.
So we're talking a little...
We hate you, Marky Mark!
So we were talking a little bit earlier about Tim Schafer.
We were.
And we got some more Tim Schafer news.
Don't tell me he shaved. Did he shave?
He didn't. It's okay, John. Okay. He still got his beard.
Did we talk about the Psychonauts 2 thing in the last episode? Or was that the episode before?
We did. We totally did.
Oh, God. Okay, so very quickly, in a nutshell...
Last episode!
30 words or less. Notch, creator of Minecraft, inadvertently suggests that he would fund Psychonauts 2.
Inadvertently my ass.
On the tweets.
On Twitter, yeah.
The Twitter
And then the CEO the of Dragon Gen, who is...
Dracogen.
Yeah. Who has done some investing as well, kind of said, hey, maybe we can make this happen. Okay? According to yesterday, I think it was yesterday's blog post, Notch has kind of backpedaled a little bit on that, since he found out how much it was actually going to cost. And he has peppered his statements with a lot of ifs, i.e., if this is going to be profitable, if it's going to be, you know, a good investment. Basically, he realized that he said something he shouldn't have, or he realized this is going to take a lot more than I think I can handle, and now he's backing up a bit, and I think going to approach it in a much more safer investment kind of wise.
Realistic fashion.
Much more realistic.
How much did we say Psychonauts cost, the original to produce?
$12 million, I believe.
In 2003, $12-13 million.
And yeah. It was not profitable. It was a failure.
Yeah.
And it was... For several reasons. Psychonauts was not a small production.
And Psychonauts was also ridiculously obtuse.
Yeah.
Psychonauts was not a game for the masses. Psychonauts had a ridiculous concept and a totally unlikable main character.
Yeah.
And a lousy sense of design. I'm going to say it right now. All you people who love Psychonauts, you're crazy.
I've yet to play it, but I really want it.
It's not a great game.
But now they're thinking...
Monkey watches.
Now the number that's been bandied around is $40 million.
Oh.
Which I guess even for the creator of Minecraft, it's an awful lot of money to invest in something.
Yeah, I don't think Notch is quite worth $40 million yet. Maybe
you want my views on the whole thing? If the world had room for Alice 2, why not?
Alice appeals to that whole weirdo Tim Burton goth chick group, that clique.
Yeah, I liked Alice.
And I'm sure Alice 2 didn't cost a whole lot of
Brutal
money.
Brutal Legend had a goth chick. He can make a goth chick the main character.
But see, again, Brutal Legend was a failure, John.
Brutal Legend was awesome!
Brutal Legend was...
Yeah!
Was a game for the first half that was pretty cool, and then it crapped its pants.
I still loved it.
It was an unfinished concept.
I just like riding around in the buggy listening to heavy metal.
See, and you could do that for the first half of the game.
and looking for sweet jumps.
The sweetest jumps.
Oh, man.
Do you ever find one where you skate off the ground for like 30 seconds? You get a Chivo.
You get a Chivo for it. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I found that.
A trough.
A fee.
Got to pay your fee.
Speak for yourself. My favorite jump is the one where you... I forget what the achievement's called. I think it's That Just Happened. So, and it's, you go down a ramp and jump over a mastodon.
Oh, that's right. You get achievement for jumping over a mastodon.
There's like a thunderclap goes off.
Yeah, that's right.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Next issue of PSM3, which I believe is like the European PlayStation magazine or something.
Yeah.
They're teasing a mystery first-person shooter sequel coming from EA for consoles.
I love mysteries. Zoinks.
Cheekies. The teaser image looks like something, stylistically speaking, dead set in line with 2006's Black, which was developed by Criterion, and was actually pretty freaking awesome.
Never played it.
It was a pretty, like, as far as last-gen console games go, it was one of the best shooters of the last generation, I think. But now, it was kind of sparse as well. There wasn't a lot to it.
It was just pretty much set piece, mission briefing.
That was the problem I had with it. It didn't really have any set pieces. It was just kind of run and shoot everything that came at you. Like, you didn't have any of those big scripted moments like you see in Call of Duty and stuff?
No, I mean, just every time you know...
But everything blew up really cool.
Yeah, and it was all pretty much ripped out of action movies.
Yeah. It was pretty awesome. I enjoyed it. I had a lot of fun with it, and it looked great on the Xbox 360 when you played it using the backwards compatibility and stuff, right?
Yeah.
So that's the rumor, that it could be a sequel to 2006's Black, or it could possibly be the first public reveal of Medal of Honor 2.
Hmm.
Either way, that's pretty cool.
Either way, I'm stoked, because I love the last Medal of Honor as much as a lot of people pan the crap out of it.
Medal of Honor 2?
Yeah.
How many Medal of Honors have there already been? Has there been a bunch?
There's been a relaunch, Kevin. You need to pay attention. Yeah, Beards.
The relaunch was awesome.
Beards.
See, the last one I played was probably Frontline, dude.
On PS2.
I don't remember what it was. It was a bridge level. You had to, like...
Yeah, that was Frontline on PS2. Sniper level.
Right. That was an awesome level.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. The bridge and Arnhem.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Played it on a little tiny 11-inch TV. It's great.
My tablet has a bigger screen.
The recently announced Resident Evil 6 is to offer more mainstream controls, including shooting while moving, cover mechanics, and combat roles.
I'm concerned.
Yeah?
I actually am. I really am. I honestly say I am concerned. I seem like a real negative bastard this episode, but that does concern me. I mean, no, I didn't like Resident Evil 5's tank controls. I like the idea of being able to move and shoot at the same time, because it only makes tactical sense.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, the guy who directed Resident Evil 5, one of our listeners, shout out Mr. Alex, I know you're out there listening, you posted some stuff on the DVD Verdict forum about Resident Evil 5 in particular, and about the director, and he was a bit of a kook.
Yeah,
he really was. He was a bit of a kook. Like, he came out and he basically said, oh, we don't want you to move and shoot at the same time because it adds to the tension. No, it doesn't add to the tension. It adds to the frustration is what it does.
You know, I think it does add to the tension.
I used to get so frustrated.
You're thinking about Dead Space again.
No, I'm not thinking about...
You're thinking about Dead Space. Okay, Resident Evil 5 was the one where you had, like...
You had hams, to chop your legs off?
You had hams strapped to your arms and he swallowed a tire. Dead Space was the awesome one with the glowy face.
Dead Space was the one where you were an electrician.
In space.
You know, I never played much of RE5, actually, to be honest.
With a screwdriver that shoots laser.
See, the thing with RE5, okay, you're in these closed-in corridors in Africa that are made out of, like, shanty towns.
Yeah.
You know, and you've got, like, 30 guys coming at you.
And 5 bullets.
You've got a handgun. And it's like, okay, guys, I understand. Do you want to make a shooter, or do you want to make a survival horror game?
Yeah.
And
you know?
The bullet detection sucked.
It did. The hit detection was terrible.
Yeah.
And... I mean, the game looked gorgeous, and yes, it did make for some pretty tense situations, but at the same time, I don't remember how many times I just got so pissed off and frustrated at the control scheme in that game.
Mm.
I was just like, this is ridiculous.
Did you play it with the Move?
No.
Well.
Well, no.
I haven't either, actually. And I actually
don't you judge me!
I have the Move. No, you know what? I did try it with it, because I had that first Sony-branded handgun that the Move... would go on to.
Oh, okay, yeah, the Move sharpshooter thing or something.
Well, it's just a gun, right?
Yeah,
it's like
it wasn't a handgun. The rifle, it was the gun.
Yeah, it was the gun, which doesn't work with any effing games.
No, because they brought the rifle out.
Well, the problem with the gun is that it allows you to do the trigger thing, but it doesn't allow you easy access to other buttons on it. And so a lot of the games where it's a shooting game, you need access to all the buttons on it.
Yeah.
So you can use it for reloading or whatever.
I heard the only two games that really supported it were The Shoot and that first Time Crisis.
Yeah, The Shoot worked for it, but other than that...
And nobody
that
played that last Time Crisis.
No.
Okay, so finally...
Oh, no, wait. Steve, what are you concerned about?
Oh, I'm thinking, like, okay, you need to find that middle ground.
Right.
Between, you know, Resident Evil and Gears of War. Because if you're adding rolling, combat mechanics, running while shooting... Middle ground existed. You're turning it into Uncharted or Gears of War. You know, you're turning it into Gears of War with zombies, is what you're doing. You're making a third person Left 4 Dead.
Yeah.
Especially all this talk about six-player co-op and whatnot. Like, you know, that's what I'm starting to see here. And Operation Raccoon City is coming in March.
Yeah.
It's basically SOCOM with zombies. It's a shooter. You know, a third-person shooter with zombies, cover mechanic, the whole nine yards, you know? So, why Resident Evil 6, if that's the case? Why even bother? You know, like, where's that sense of tension? You could get the happy medium. You could have a Dead Space. You know, Dead Space was Resident Evil 5 or Resident Evil 4 perfected.
Yeah.
You know, it had that tension. It had the intensity. It had the scariness. It had the spookiness. It had the set pieces.
What's the setting for RE6? Do we know?
It's a like a coastal city in China. Basically.
You know what?
Like a
you know what?
Shanghai type of city.
We got to get out of these cities.
Yeah.
RE has got to go back to the mansion, baby.
I'd like to see a throwback, but I don't know. What does have me excited about it?
They gotta watch it, man. You remember the hate mail everyone got when Chris started killing like an ethnic group in Resident Evil 5?
This is true. Now he's going on ape shit on Chinese people.
Yeah. Huh. So it was that's his setting, and where's Leon?
I'm not sure. It's like some.
And what about Baldy McMuscles?
Don't know.
It's dangerous territory for us to be talking about gay ethnic groups.
Yeah, it is. Let's not go there. Okay. But you know, it's. I am concerned. I think they should be looking more at Dead Space than Gears of War.
Yeah.
You know, the pacing was not the issue. It was the control scheme. Don't change the pacing. I don't need the combat roll. I don't need to hide behind cover. I just need to be able to move and shoot at the same time.
Yeah.
You know?
And, just so everyone knows, we're not making fun of ethnic groups. We're making fun of knee-jerk reactions.
Yes, we are.
That's right, yeah.
So no knee-jerk reactions, please. Yeah. Don't bomb us with hate mail.
Some mail would be nice.
Mail would be good, but not hate mail, please.
You can like us on our Facebook page, too.
You can. There's a Facebook page. Just search Blast
Nine
Processing.
More people, and you might get those t-shirts. Mm. Nine more. That's Nine less more. Than 10.
It is.
It's a possibility. You know what? I've got 41 on my own Facebook
maybe,
page.
Maybe we'll start a Kickstarter page.
We should try to get some of those guys over onto the Blast Processing page. How about that?
That sounds good. Don't you have some last news for us?
I do. I don't need this, though.
Okay.
What are we going to...
Okay, so finally, in This Week in Minecraft, Minecraft Pocket Edition will not be coming to the PS Vita.
Boo!
Vita!
Snoot! Yeah, I see him!
It's coming to the Xbox, it's on the Sony Xperia Play, it's on Android, it's on the iPad. It's not going to be on the Vita, or I guess the PS3, probably.
I blame Microsoft.
Yeah. Unfortunately.
And I also blame Notch's, the very public, vocal, controversial statement he made.
About
not putting it on anything with a fucking stupid name.
Did he really say that?
No.
Oh. Well, I wouldn't be surprised, actually.
Well, it wouldn't be the first time he stuck his foot in his mouth.
Yeah.
Why does his foot get past that beard?
In update news, we still don't have the update for Pocket Edition. It's been delayed. We were supposed to have it on the, 8th, I think. No news yet when it's coming. I've been checking.
That update has become the new Duke Nukem forever.
It has been. It has. There is an update coming, though, for the regular edition.
Woo!
Which, much to everybody's happiness, I'm sure,
triples
the size, the height of the map. So it essentially doubles from surface to air. It doubles the height of the map, which is awesome. It means your structures can be a lot taller, and hopefully that'll affect... the world generation as well, so you'll get really tall mountains and hills, which is really cool. Now,
you can only hope.
Modders have been doing this already. You can install mods for like insane heights, but it's really glad. I'm really glad to see some of this going into the actual game, and I'm hoping that more of the stuff that modders are doing are going to find its way into the full game because they're just doing some amazing stuff. And that's This Week in Minecraft.
That's our news.
I've been Kevin.
I've been Steve.
I'm Jimmy Chase. And you're on us. Classic.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Dead Space.
Man, I wish the title screen did that.
Speaking of Dead Space.
I'm thinking we're at almost an hour and a half. Do we do an ambush topic, or do we just clue it up?
No, we clue it up, man.
This part's
you edit this part.
This part's going to be edited out.
Yeah. I'm going to pass out. I don't know if I can drink this second Dr. Pepper. Give it to me. Go ahead, wrap it up, Steve. Wrap it up.
That was the news. Thank you, Kev, for the Minecraft update.
No sweat, man. I am always here to talk about my favorite geeky subject, Minecraft. Well, you know it's going to be Minecraft Lego, right? I talked about that before.
I thought your favorite geeky subject was, like, acid jazz.
Acid jazz?
Jazz trombone.
So, that's it for us from this week. You know, there's your news and what we've been playing and a little bit of everything. We're glad we could spend this time together.
We talked about a lot of different things this week.
We did. We talked about many things.
Yeah,
we've grown.
We've all grown stronger as a people, more unified. Or something.
Oh, I love watching my tattoo move on the wire.
Oh, God.
It's hypnotic.
If there's anything we want you to take away from this week's podcast, it is this.
You are not brought upon this world to get it.
Farewell, and something.